I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Thanks, Ken. I enjoy our time together.
Before we pick up from where we left off last week, there have been several comments left on the website that I thought you might like to respond to.
Yes, Ken, there have been some good comments, but quite apart from those, I've also had some contact me by phone as well, wanting to talk in depth about the personal mentoring and also the idea of having an annual workshop, starting those up again like we used to do before the global financial crisis. So right now I'm in the process of putting together all of their thoughts and comments and suggestions, and hopefully by next week I should be able to come up with something and talk in a lot more detail about what I've been able to put together as a package which provides considerable value, not only in the mentoring side but also the ongoing training and just raising the experience and confidence, probably more than anything else, in tackling commercial property investment. So as I said, hopefully that should all come together and take shape by next week.
Last week you touched upon public tender as being a good method of selling. Why then do many agents and sellers tend to prefer an expression of interest sales campaign?
I think if you talk to a lot of commercial agents, they will tell you that in their view, most people just won't submit conforming tenders. Now, a conforming tender means that the tender documentation as provided to the prospective purchasers is executed and returned with no changes. All they're required to do is insert the price and perhaps the settlement period. But other than that, it's intended that there be no significant changes. Quite often there are some minor changes, which are not significant, that are made by the intended purchaser. But otherwise, it is expected that the tender documentation is submitted by the due date, effectively unaltered. Now, these agents therefore say that if people are reluctant to submit a conforming tender, why waste the time and effort with a tender process if they're effectively either modifying the tenders or putting in letters of interest? Why don't you go straight to an expression of interest campaign? And all that does is have people demonstrate their interest, show their capabilities to purchase, and provide some level of indication of what sort of price they will pay. Now, if you start to ask people why they don't submit conforming tenders, it's interesting to get the feedback. And I spent some time doing this, and most of the people I spoke to were very frank about it and said that they never feel in the time frame of the advertising campaign to have been provided with sufficient information to be absolutely comfortable of putting in a conforming tender, which is effectively an unconditional contract. And the reason for that is simple. The traditional way of marketing, which we discussed last week, means that when first contact is made with an agent, that agent will dispatch the information memorandum. Now, depending on how detailed that is or whether that prospective buyer is in fact interested, they will then ask for more information, but they may not ask for all the information they need. They just ask for a specific item, so that's then provided. So as you can see with the timeline we discussed last week, you get closer and closer to the tender date, and you're getting provided with the information on the drip feed. And so it's understandable that people get a little concerned that they hope they've asked for everything that's necessary, but maybe there's something out there that someone else has got that they haven't got, or the agent simply hasn't provided it. It's not that he's withholding it, he hasn't been asked for it. So there is this background fear or concern, if you like, that they may be shooting in the dark, putting in a price that is higher than is necessary, and on conditions that may come back to bite them later. And as I said, it is purely because of a concern that they do not have all of the information available to them.
So how do you get around that?
Well, that's not very difficult at all. You see, all you have to do is provide or allow the prospective purchaser to view everything related to the sale as soon as they demonstrate they have an interest in it. Now, most agents feel that the advertisement has to sell the property. Now, if you go back to direct marketing fundamentals, it is more than a one-step process. It's probably at least two, probably three. In other words, the purpose of the ad is not to sell the property. It is to identify the person, kindle their interest, to take the next step to find out more. And so what we do, and that was explained a little in the stealth marketing, is that you move the people from the advertisement to the website, but they only get to see one page, which expands upon the teaser information in the advertisement, allows them to make a judgment as to whether this property is of interest to them or not. But to go to the next stage, they're obliged to register on the website, where they have to leave their first name, last name, email address, and daytime phone number. But at that point, the psychology has changed. You're no longer pushing information at them, which is what an ad does. They have taken the step to ask for information, and so they're happy to exchange those personal details because they have, in step two, decided they want to read more. And so, in simple terms, the formula with direct marketing is if you can get the people to read the first 50 words, which is the ad, they'll then go on and read the next 500 words, which is that first page on the website. And the next level up is they will read the next 5,000 words, which is the entire website. But you now have their undivided attention because they have chosen to take that step. And so, as I said, at least a two-step process, but ideally a three-step process, because at that point, they have made the choice to explore and read in depth all the information about the property. Now, the website itself has everything from plans to contracts to photographs, even videos, all the documentation about every aspect concerning the property, whether it's its layout, its tenancy details, the construction, everything that is there. So that within 30 minutes, a prospective purchaser who might be interested in the property can decide whether they are in or they're out. And one of the benefits of this also is that it enables you to track in detail where everyone is coming from the purpose of whether it is the media, and if so, which media, and email, mail-outs, the board, the brochures, everything has its own tracking code, so that in real time, as an ad goes in, you can watch people coming onto the website, and then you can further see those that register and go into the behind the scenes to get more information. And because you have everything up there at once, the people can grasp the whole picture and don't feel that they have this exposure of not having all the information any longer.
From what I'm hearing, it sounds as though your approach to selling allows you to tell the full story about each property.
That's right. I mean, once you have their attention, because they've chosen to take that third step, these buyers are hungry for everything they can get their hands on, particularly if they can pick and choose the information and the order in which they want to view it, because that's the advantage of a website. You can move around, navigate the website so that something that captures your interest and that leads you to another step and another step. So you can do that. Now, it may be that some people will never see all the information on the website, but the fact that you've offered it there gives them the comfort of knowing that they or their advisors, and that may be their lawyer, their architect, their builder, can also access all of this information to help them make a judgment on the property. And so what it means is that these people know that they now have all the information, but more importantly, they know that anybody else interested in the property has all the information. And so if they don't put in a conforming tender, the chances are someone else will, that will be accepted, and then they will miss out. I've got to say, over the last 10 to 12 years has been the case. And apart from one property up in Tarkata, which was in the middle of nowhere, and it came right at the time of the global financial crisis, that's the only property that hasn't been successful and sold at tender with a conforming tender in the last 12 years. So it's not something that's new. A lot of agents may see it as that because it is different to what they do. And yes, there is a little bit of extra work in getting the website together and putting all the information in one spot. But it means that once it's there, you can very quickly sift, sort and screen all the buyers. They hold their hand up by registering as to whether they're interested. You can follow the time spent on the website with the statistics, and so that you can very quickly determine out of, let's say, in some properties, which might surprise people, you have 200 or 300 people go onto the website. Now, generally, we find that of those 200, 20 or 30 will go through to the register. And then out of those, there will be 2 to 5 that will be your core group that are the real starters with whom you want to spend, and your client, obviously, being the vendor, wants you to spend as much time as is necessary to nurture them to the point where they will submit a conforming tender. And so it's a process that works well for purchasers, but it also works well for agents. But the real beneficiary out of this is you as the vendor, knowing that you have reached the widest market and educated them to the point of making a conforming tender and giving you something that you can, when tenders close, make a decision on.
Are you perhaps able to give an example where you've used this approach with one of your clients?
Yes, there's one property that comes to mind, and that is a property in South Yarra. It was 3 levels on a strata title building, so it was leased to one tenant. It was Macmillan Publishers. It was, I think, a 10-year lease with 7 years to run. Great tenant in Macmillan Publishers. However, they were spread over 3 floors and they were strata title floors. Now, the owner had a valuation of $11.2 million prepared before the campaign had started. So you've got to think, if someone is wanting to spend that sort of money, normally they would be wanting to purchase a standalone building, not 3 floors within a strata title property, and more particularly leased to one tenant. And so the difficulty was, and I said to the client, I feel you should put the valuation up on the website. And initially he had a little concern. I said, no, think about it. The first thing anyone is going to ask is, how much do we expect the property to be worth? Now, there's 2 schools of thought. If an agent tells you a figure, one group will say, well, he's obviously underquoting it to get me involved. Then there's the other group that says, well, he's probably talking the price up, so I'll probably want to offer less than that. By putting the valuation up on the website, what that does is removes all the ambiguity. And now it's not what an agent says, it's what an independent valuer has said. And so from a purchaser's point of view, it now is no longer, in this case, an $11 million decision. It comes down to a $100,000 or $200,000 decision. In other words, we know the ballpark because that's what the valuation says. The question is, can we get it for a little bit less, or do we have to pay a little bit more? So their focus is clearly above $11 million. And the question is, how much above $1 million do I have to go? So this narrows their thinking, gives them, again, more confidence because they don't feel they're shooting in the dark, because they have this independent valuation which they can read in detail, look at all the sales evidence. It's a very comprehensive document, all available on the website. And this is the only way that you can provide that amount of information so that the purchasers feel that they have the full information available to them, not only about the property, but in this case about the market and the level of value anticipated as far as the property and the vendor is concerned. So, as you can expect, close of tenders, within 10 minutes after the opening of the tender box, the vendor executed a contract and the property was sold. So it sold, from memory, from $11.15 million, so very close to the 11.2 valuation.
Would it be possible to include a link to the property so our listeners can spend some time investigating all the benefits in more detail?
That's easy, Ken. We'll put up on the Property Briefings website under this podcast a link to the property that Macmillan Publishing occupied, and that URL is Claremont, C-L-A-R-E-M-O-N-T, Claremont-tender.info. Now, that'll take you to the page that people went to after they'd read the ad or seen the brochure or got an email, so that they could study in a little bit more detail what was on offer. But as you try and click on the various links, you'll find that you are asked to register. So you can go through the same process that everybody went through to go into the real nub of the information behind the scenes into all the web pages. Now, what I'd like you to do, and we talked about before about telling the story, is to just quietly work your way through there, because there's a lot of information about the area, about the precinct that it's located in South Yarra, near the South Yarra Railway Station. But also it talks about the other tenants in the building as well. There's a tab there that talks about the three floors. And I want you to have a look at that, because it explores the situation of the concern that people would have had about Macmillan Publishing if and when they were to vacate. How would they cope with the three floors being vacant? Now, I won't tell you any more about that, but what the website enabled us to do was to walk them through that whole scenario, because the secret in any marketing is to enter into the conversation that's already going on in your prospect's head. And so obviously one of the concerns would be, well, what if Macmillan Publishing were to leave at the end of their lease? What would I do? What would the property be worth? Well, you have a look at that tab, and that walks you through the whole scenario. And as you'll discover, the property is actually worth more with Macmillan not being there than them remaining on as a tenant. So we were able to address that concern, that unspoken but thought about, or if they hadn't thought about it at the time of going on the website, it would have emerged at some point. But the beauty of having the website is that we can address those sort of issues and walk them with a story and all the facts to the conclusion and give them the comfort of knowing that that is not a point of exposure. So anyway, it's worth having a look at that. And I'd appreciate your feedback and your thoughts on how that all came together.
It also seems our listeners are now starting to pose some of their own questions. So what we might do next week is start addressing a few of those, if that's okay.
Yes, Ken, more than happy to tackle questions next week from our listeners. And I think it's important that even if you are on the podcast from iTunes, if you can go back onto the website, that's propertybriefings.com, and leave your comments as to how you found the content that what we're covering already. But more importantly, let's have some of the questions and raise some of the specific issues that are important to you so that we can make sure they're addressed and covered, because that's the whole idea of these podcasts, is to provide some sort of interaction. And you're the ones that can write the script, as it were, and make sure that, well, they do cover everything that is important to you. Anyway, Ken, I'll look forward to catching up with you again next week.